that have been put in place now for COVID, the programs are also not being distributed equitably. Much like the previous programs of subcontractor inclusion or any other programs where there is trying to overcome some disparity. Even in, we look at the programs of the open and honest accountable elections are another example. These are all programs that are there to address disparities, but if you look at the statistics of how those funds are allocated, there is disparity within the disparity. And not all the folks that are in most need are the ones that are in the highest likelihood to qualify. So we have to have leaders that are not only looking at these programs now and using the equity lens in the rearview mirror to look at things in retrospect through studies and analysis. You have to be able to look forward and do this with intention. I understand as a designer that things like redlining and so many other rules, policies that were created to hold down communities of color were done so by intentional design. And so with intentionality, we have to look forward and design programs and systems that are going to look at these issues specifically and know what are the outcomes that we're looking for. So if we want to be specific within the Black community, we have to begin by leveraging those leaders within the community that are going to help lift up and provide that recovery that needs in the near term. So I will work with community organizations, churches, to help create early pathways to bring people back into employment. And that's just the beginning.
Thank you. Our next question, we will respond in the order of candidates Rayford, Wheeler, Gonzalez, and Ayanna Rome. The question is, Black Portlanders are priced out of every single neighborhood in the city of Portland, meaning that the median monthly income of Black-led households is less than three times the median rent or mortgage throughout the city. Talk about your plans to make Portland a city where we can all live, enjoy, and afford.
Thank you, Michael. Sorry for the muting. And also there's a loud bell in the background, so hopefully it won't disturb us. So one of the reasons that I started an advocacy and a legal clinic was so that we could start systemically removing barriers from opportunities in our community. And what we all know now, 10 years later, since I've been, you know, hanging out in archives and trying to go back and forth to the state capitol, is that the underlying issue in Portland, again, is not the lack of fair access to an opportunity. I'm a fourth generation Oregonian. My mom's brothers and that generation, they went to college. Some of their parents even went to school and went to college. They owned businesses, they owned houses. They built this community that I grew up in, which was very fortifying. We had politicians, we had people in all different types of industries. But the underlying problem that we have here in Portland, we can't deny it. And it's racism. It's the fact that our system has been owned and controlled by the same variables of the status quo. And in order to make things work in that system of, let's say, white supremacy or patriarchy, we don't want to undermine the process. But what we need to realize is that when we seek to address certain issues that are harmful to us, it's showing that the process is unfavorable to our humanity. It's showing that the process does not allow for a standard of success. And so we have to change those processes. And I think that when we talk about the issue of white supremacy and the violence of policy that undermines the basic human rights and access to people, that again, it's going to take the leaders from those communities. For the last 12 months on this campaign, we've been talking about racial equity. But I've heard at too many different forums, what is our plan? How are we going to address these inequities? And again, we can go back to our history books. Everything that we've said has already been said. And for my community and for the Black community, everything that I can imagine to want to do has already been done. Our elders consume themselves with creating an opportunity for our future generations. We're not realizing those opportunities, not because they were ineffective as parents or leaders or community members, but because we're working within a system that is undermining us because it does not value our our input and our access. I've seen this a lot through this campaign. I've been in Portland my whole entire life. There's nothing that we can say that has not already been said, even in this race. Until we change the leaders that can effectively bring our community together and have the courage, and like you said earlier, Michael, the humility to serve on a level of decency and ethics, just because those experiences do give us that guidance, nothing is going to change.
Thank you. Okay. Candidate Wheeler.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. First of all, I would say we have changed the leadership. And the leadership that we've changed is we've moved to a community-based, a community-centered approach to improving our housing situation. What do I mean by that? Well, first of all, let's look at the North-Northeast housing strategy. That is community-run. It works in partnership with the Housing Bureau, and I'm the commissioner in charge of the Housing Bureau. We have created new affordable housing in North and Northeast Portland. In fact, we've exceeded the original goals of the strategy. As I mentioned earlier during my opening statement, we've also helped keep people in their housing so that they would not be displaced. The city council prior to my getting there, but I strongly have supported the preference policy and making sure that as it has rolled out and as it's been implemented, we've had a strong rollout. And a PSU study just showed that 84% of the households benefiting from our preference policy are Black families who wanted to return or stay in North and Northeast housing. Of course, as I also said, we have been nimble with the resources we have. We allocated funds to 2,000 households through the Portland Housing Stability Fund, and we intend to put more of our COVID-related resources into that. We pushed the overall strategies around the 2035 Central City Plan, the housing bond, which was brought to us by the community. We have implemented it. We've worked with the community to implement it. I slowed down the implementation by 2 months, and the mainstream media destroyed me on that decision. But I did it because frontline communities, especially the African American community, asked us to slow down and include them in the goals. We have exceeded the expectations and the promises of that bond. And finally, through the Housing Bureau, we have had 2 record years of affordable and workforce housing production under my leadership. We're off to a good start with the community. Let's keep working together. Let's keep moving forward and making progress as we've already been doing.
Thank you. Candidate Gonzalez.
Thank you. This question brings up this concept of inclusion. And I want to make 2 points about inclusion that we really need to think about here in the city of Portland today. We are a city that's full of equity lenses and equity inclusion and diversity policies. And you're hard pressed to find a nonprofit or an organization today that hasn't been working on one of those and has it somewhere on a website or in their policy files. But at the same time, there's an echo there somewhere. But at the same time, it's important to recognize that inclusion is something that we talk about in Portland by and large as though there is this giving a seat at the table without recognizing that the table doesn't belong to the power system. Inclusion, from the perspective of inclusion practitioners, I being one of them who's giving courses on these ideas, I really promote that inclusion is about government doing its job better. If we don't have someone from the front line who experiences those issues of addiction or homelessness or affordable housing concerns with a full-time job, those are lived experiences that would be missing from a conversation we need to solve the problem. The second point I want to make about inclusion has to do with how we value the contributions of folks of color. The stories of the contributions of the Black community here in Portland, Oregon are not something that are common knowledge. The way we tell the stories of the mainstream dominant culture's contributions to the history line. There's a lot of story of North America that isn't there either. And we need leaders that understand that when you include people, you're not doing a favor to them. You're doing a favor to the system itself. And the table that you invite them to is never yours. It's always theirs, and you're the one setting it. That's the kind of leadership we need to adapt, and it's a different approach to leadership, and it's what I bring.
Thank you. Candidate Ayanna Rohn.
Yes, thank you. And Mr. Gonzalez is right in terms of inclusion. It's really too bad that it was 2 months before you know, these policies are being passed, and we're now talking to frontline communities to get their feedback about how they're supposed to look. They should have been shaping them from day one, and into displacement, frankly, should have been at the top of the agenda for the entire comprehensive plan update. And the fact that we're thinking about these things after the fact, I think, shows that we've had our priorities slightly out of whack and not been talking to the right people. The same with the right to return policy in North Northeast Portland, and the fact that the Neighborhood Housing Strategy Oversight Committee actually said that the right to return policy wasn't working. And the mayor admitted it's an abject failure, and the buck stops with me. Well, I think the buck stops here in terms of, do we really want someone who's willing to say something's an abject failure and then not double down on fixing it? When it comes right down to it, there are three things that we need to look at on this front. One, accountability. What are we doing in our housing bureau, for whom and how? What is going on in that bureau? I'm not sure it's transparent to the public. Two, we need to make sure that home ownership is on the table. When you look at the home ownership rate between Black Portlanders and white Portlanders, the disparity, it's inverse who has access to that. And finally, we need to close the income gap, because ultimately we know that's what's going to stabilize Portland's families and help them go to the same schools over their lifetime or live in neighborhoods they desire, is making sure that that income gap is closed. And unlike climate change, which we have attempted to tackle with intention based on reducing greenhouse gas emissions, we have actually not tackled racial inequality with the same focus. And I think that looking at something like what I'm calling the 30-30-30 plan to reduce income disparity for 30-year-old Portlanders by 2030 by 30% would be a way for us to start thinking about really moving the needle through targeted strategic investments over time to close that income gap, especially for our youngest Black Portlanders.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, K282B H. Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. This is the Urban League of Portland Black Votes Matter 2020 Candidate Forum.
Metrics became available in the 1970s. The Black unemployment rate has typically been 2 to 3 times higher than the general unemployment rate in Portland. Given that the rate of unemployment is rising during COVID-19, how would you ensure that people of color will have access to career track employment in the city? Candidate Wheeler, you're still on mute.
I knew that, Michael. I was just testing you. Thank you for reminding me. Look, this has been one of the centerpieces of my administration, is shared economic prosperity. As I said up front, I don't really care if there is prosperity in our community if it's not shared broadly, and it historically has not been. And that's why the number one thing I have done in my economic development strategy through my economic development task force has been to create the Portland Means Progress Initiative. It is intentionally focused towards young people of color, particularly African Americans, to get them into the labor force and also to include a culture of inclusivity and diversity. So I went out there and I met with private sector partners one at a time. We have companies from 2 people to 5,000 employees, and they've signed on and they're helping to do this. We also created the Inclusive Business Resource Network in 2017 through Prosper Portland. I'm the commissioner in charge. The goal there was to support minority and business owners of color who want to start their own businesses. And right now, 70% of the people receiving either funding or technical support are people of color. We also created, through the Broadway Corridor Plan, this is our next big, great place in our community. I said, I don't want to just do another Pearl District. I want something that's inclusive, that engages other people in our community in the economic opportunity around the Broadway Corridor. So we have a coalition of individuals, it is broad, working to create a community benefits agreement. We're close, I think, to the final negotiations on that, and it's going to redefine the way that we do large-scale development in the city of Portland. The Mercatus program, which came through the community, which we continue to operate, that is supporting businesses that are 100% people of color. And of course, when it comes to specific projects like the North Russell, North Williams Street proposal, we're letting the community lead it. That is the African-American community leading the initiative on how we, the city, engage on a very significant economic development project. So it's putting the community first at the table where the decisions are made and the resources get allocated. That's how we're going to continue.
Candidate Gonzalez.
Thank you. One thing I will never do as mayor is let you lead. I will ask you to please lead, because I need you to lead in places where this is most impacting the community that you're most invested in. And that's to recognize that there are things that are blind spots to me, and I know that having folks that can complement those blind spots is just how I will get better at doing my job. So I am out there working every day to help address the issues, like the helping provide technical assistance to the companies in Mercado's program, and helping with some of the inclusion programs and capital projects today. The Portland Building Renovation Project is the city's largest capital improvement project. It also happens to have the most aggressive diversity and inclusion goals in the city's history. I've been the program manager for that project. So some of the programs our mayor mentions require folks on the ground to implement these things. And in my experience, one thing I've learned is that the numbers do not tell the whole story. I could say the Portland Building Project has exceeded all of its goals with bringing on a diverse workforce, having the most women and the most minorities percent of labor on the project of any project in the city's history. However, I can also tell you that the experience of those folks of color and the women entering that workforce aren't always having the best experience, because they're not always walking into an inclusive environment. And so changing the culture of that inclusivity requires the leaders from the top to understand that inclusion really is not a favor you grant and bestow upon others. And it also means that representation is recognized as the most important thing. So I want to bring representation across the chain of command, so you have leaders, mentors, teachers, and folks across the board that reflect you, so that every young person sees people in front of them that they can relate to.
Thank you. Candidate Ayanna Rohn.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear talk about Prosper Portland and racial disparities, because I think there are a lot of Black Portlanders who still remember the Portland Development Commission and probably don't trust that institution all that much to be a change agent. And I don't know that the work in rebuilding that trust is as thorough or as complete as the incumbent is claiming. We talk a lot, Mr. Gonzalez is right, in terms of things like Portland Means Progress or the Tech Pledge, but then when you click through to the data on are these programs really moving the needle on disparities, wealth disparities, income disparities, stabilization for communities, are we having an impact? I'm not sure that we are, and I'm not sure how we would know if we are or not. It's going to be important for us through this next phase, which is going to be very lean, for us to have a small business-minded person, not a corporate-minded person, in leadership at the highest level of the city, to help make sure that we're steering our precious resources toward small business and entrepreneurship. I proposed actually taking a position out of Prosper Portland and putting it right in the mayor's office that will be the agent, a single point of contact for small business and entrepreneurship, who's going to actually be charged with developing the data so that we can actually track how the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Portland is having impacts. How do we know if our data systems aren't adequate, if we're not collecting the right data, whether or not our investments are having an impact? So we need to actually have someone popped out above Prosper Portland so they can even look at the activities inside Prosper Portland to see, is this even working or not? When we look at things like the Hillblock Project in contrast to Broadway Corridor, and you look at places where there are disparities in capital investments, and how do we really try to not only develop Portland's future, but remediate the ills of the past, we still have an awful lot of work to do. And I have a disposition toward doing that healing work, and I hope that Portlanders would trust me to be a good accomplice in that work.
Thank you. Candidate Rayford.
Thank you so much. I wanted to say a couple of years ago, right after the death of my nephew, I was wondering why we didn't have more vocational training available to students coming out of high school that weren't going to go to college, because I came home from Texas and I saw what, in my opinion, was urban renewal, right? I saw a lot of growth in my community. I saw a lot of the blight that was there becoming kind of rehabilitated. But then I had a relationship with the Architectural Heritage Center at the same time. So I kind of learned about some of the discrepancies behind what that urban renewal was for our community, what it meant for people who had been, you know, living there their whole lives, running businesses, raising their children. Some people had never been out of Portland, and let's talk about two or three generations that probably haven't been to another state outside of the city of Portland, much less, you know, just north and northeast. But at the time, we were going through what I learned was displacement and gentrification. And I saw the inequities and I saw them moving fast. And I kind of wondered, I said, how in the heck did we go from a thriving community where people were like building wealth and building opportunities for their children, investing in their futures, to displacement, mass incarceration, lack of opportunities through our education system, no access to housing, because again, if you're living in poverty and you're not properly educated, there is no resource that can accommodate that. And we see that with our housing issue. We see the people that are houseless are Black and brown children and families and our elders. And so one of the things that I wanted to understand was that how did we provide urban renewal to the city of Portland without educating those people that would be most vulnerable? Why didn't we bring the opportunities to the people that had those businesses, that had those houses, that maintained those communities for so many generations and were enabled through that community prosperity to build the future that, you know, people in my neighborhood in my time had? What happened? And the fact that we've never created a substantial standard that provides educational assets that don't go away when the plan is gone, that don't go away when that department is gone, that don't rely on just that.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. You are listening to the Urban League of Portland Black Votes Matter 2020 Candidate Forum.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm going to move on to our next question, and the order of response will be Candidate Gonzalez, Candidate Ayanna Roan, Candidate Rayford, and Candidate Wheeler. According to the Urban League's 2019 Black Civic Census, Black Oregonians overwhelmingly feel that they do not have a voice or representation in their local government. How will you work to change that? And we'll begin with Candidate Gonzalez.
Thank you. The way I've learned to enter a room when I have a lot to learn and I am just one perspective among many is to listen and to empathize. I intend on having folks within my cabinet that have a deep historical investment and a deep knowledge of the history of the Black community in Portland, because that is really the word history I tend to balk at even using. It's not that long ago, and in fact we're still exhibiting the results of decisions made not very long ago. So this is not the history. I would say it's the legacy of everything that's been contributed, even that which has not been recognized. Having that visibility very close is key. That's institutional knowledge in the story of our city. And that is a very important part of a relationship that has to be built. I recognize that I don't have that visibility the way folks that have experienced it firsthand here in Portland have. But I do come from a place where I grew up in a subjugated community where I was afraid of walking outside of my own home because I knew that the patrol vehicles that were in my neighborhood were not there to protect me from anything. They were there to protect the world from me. And I know that that's something that we have communities in Portland feeling to this day. So I walk in with a lens that understands and does not need to be explained what it's like to have that feeling. I want to make sure that our young people in Portland don't have that feeling. And I want to make sure that whether we're talking about policing or education, we're bringing people that represent the community of Portland and the Black community of Portland especially in a way that is lifting up others behind them. And I'm going to get out of the way as much as I can.
Thank you. Candidate Ayanna Rong?
Yeah, this is such an important topic of conversation, especially with the upcoming mandated charter review process in 2021. You know, we've heard an awful lot of talk about the City Club report on the commission form of government and how we know that's reinforcing racial disparities in our city. But what we haven't really looked at is, and I think that this COVID crisis makes clear, is that chaos is the new normal. And as we look at that charter, not just on the way that we want to elect our representatives or govern ourselves at the council level or manage our city or do our budgeting, we need to think about the suite of government reforms that are going to be necessary to keep our government nimble, responsive, adaptive, and accountable to the people. So on my website, sarah2020.com, we've released a good government policy, and I encourage folks to go take a look at it, because what it does is look at everything from the weak mayor commission form of government to participatory budgeting, to how we do our voting so it's not runoff voting, so you wouldn't have to choose between me and other candidates that you like, but you could rank us and reduce the rancor in our electoral politics. It includes things like how do we make decisions at the neighborhood level. There's been a lot of divisiveness at the neighborhood level, and what does it mean for us to actually engage at that scale without that having be de facto white homeowner association politics. We need to make investments in a healthy democracy now more than ever, because when we are in chaotic times, whether they're driven by climate change, whether they're driven by, say, national elections and the alt-right, whether they're driven by a pandemic or economic crises, we need a healthy democracy here at the foundation of everything that we're trying to do in Portland. And so my small donor campaign means that I am accountable to thousands of Portlanders. My campaign is on track to set a record for the highest number of donors ever in any City of Portland election. And so that means that the full power of the people will be behind an administration in which we're thinking about a healthy democracy for future generations.
Thank you. Candidate Rayford.
I just wanted to say again, I'm running based on accountability. I want to run as an anti-corruption candidate that can bring a change to City Hall. I'm going to go ahead and piggyback off of what Sarah said about changing the commission form of government, because that's one of the ways that I want to build in community participation. I've been through 96 neighborhoods over the last 18 months asking people to vote for us. I've had campaign volunteers in 600 numbers going through neighborhoods, showing up at coffee meetups, showing up at libraries, showing up at parks, doing whatever they can to come together to organize, just to get the vote out to people that usually don't even know who the mayor is, usually don't have anybody knocking at their door. We didn't ask for money. Sometimes people donated to us because we knocked on their doors, but a lot of the times we didn't really even ask for money, because the biggest benefit and asset that we got out of this campaign was being in direct contact with people that have their opportunity to share with us what matters to them. And so what we did was we also created a survey where people could even go on our website. They didn't have to wait for somebody to knock on their door. And they talked to us through that survey, and we built the people's platform. You can see it on my website, which is TeresaRayfordForMayor.com. And a lot of the things that I want to do, they're very radical. It seems sometimes to people as if I want to change and establish a new system. But I do. I believe in reconstruction. And so if you elect me, we're going to go ahead and get off to a really good start, because I trust what the people believe in. I trust and I don't mind serving from that basis. So contact me right now, sign up to phone bank with us. You can check us out again at TeresaRayfordForMayor.com. And I hope that you choose change. I don't want to run a campaign on fear. Donald Trump right now is telling us that if, you know, he's going to be the president because of coronavirus. I don't want people to think that we have to live in a world of fear when we can live in a world of hope. And change is on the front line. That's where it starts and that's where it ends. So elect me on May 19th to be Portland's next mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Candidate Wheeler.
Yeah, thank you. The answer, I think, in part based on what I'm hearing from people in the community, just to reiterate what the question was, it was that a recent report showed that Black Americans overwhelmingly feel that their voices are not represented in government. Getting back to that issue, my administration has been keenly aware of that because my administration is largely made up of people of color who feel that they personally were shut out of the process as they were growing up here in the city or somewhere else. And so for every major issue that we address, we engage people, we ask them to participate. People often contact us and say they want to participate. And just a couple examples, the Northeast Housing Program that I just mentioned before is very much focused on African-American households in North and Northeast Portland and finding stability. That program is led by people in the community. The North Russell, North Williams block development, that is the first time that mostly African-Americans on that committee have the tools like tax increment financing working for them rather than against them and displacing them. And that's I think, a good step in the right direction. Around police reform, the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing is largely run by folks who are in the community who self-identify as Black. If you don't think they're independent from me, look at what Lakeana Drury, the Crow Chair, said today about the consultant who was hired by the Department of Justice. They're completely independent. They've helped elevate the conversation from the community. And finally, when it comes to homelessness, we work with a whole array of partners who are in the community, who know the community trusts, who aren't part of government. And that has proven to be a really successful strategy of this administration. We're going to continue to do more of that going forward. So thank you for the question. It's an important one, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it, if briefly.
All right. I'm going to point out that we are, as always, I think the discussion has been richer than the time that we had set aside. So rather than close on two questions, there's one additional question that I'd like us to go through. And again, if folks can be cognizant of time, and then we do want to afford people the opportunity for their closing statements. So this will be answered in the order of candidate Ayanna Roan, candidate Rayford, candidate Wheeler, candidate Gonzalez. The U.S. Department of Justice recently found that the Portland Police Bureau, whose arrests of Black people far exceeds their representation in the population, is in compliance with the 2014 settlement related to police use of excessive force. Are you happy with the Police Bureau's performance over these 6 years? What would you seek to change if you are not? Beginning again with candidate Ayanna Roan.
Yes, and thank you for this question. I'm sorry that we have to keep having this difficult conversation year after year. I don't think that we can pat ourselves on the back as having accomplished much when we had the highest number of police shootings last year in a decade. And as long as the Albina Ministerial Alliance is not happy with that settlement, it really doesn't matter to me what Trump's DOJ has to say about it. It's the people of Portland who are most affected by Portland's policing that have to lead on this situation. I was not happy initially with the dismantling of COAB. I know it was very dysfunctional, but I saw at the heart of that dysfunction was an underinvestment and a clarity. The outside consultants there were largely the problem. But I also don't know that we fully funded its replacement. and we do need much more rigorous community oversight of policing. However, my campaign is run by a young Black Lives Matter activist who the incumbent actually locked out of City Hall. I know that he locked candidate Rayford out at several times too. I just don't know that that's the kind of person that we can trust to lead us in things like a sanctuary city policy or through the era of Black Lives Matter and thinking about anti-racist policing and sanctuary cities if we're not making sure these are people who will always be welcome in Portland City Hall, even when they disagree, and making sure that we're making deep investments in community oversight of policing, rethinking the discipline guides so that we can make sure that we're getting rid of biased police officers and making sure that everything that we're doing in terms of outcomes and accountability is shaped by the community and that we're not just consulting them after the fact about how this should or shouldn't be going or whether we are or are not doing well.
Thank you. Candidate Rayford.
So it's very important to understand how politics and how the history of Portland policing in Portland plays out. In 2014, when Judge Simon gave us the verdict that put them into a situation where they had to be in compliance, where most of the community was asking for training, where we developed the COAB in partnership with these different agencies outside of Chicago and different organizations, including our mental health organizations. It was the smoking mirrors situation that we find ourselves in. The whole reason that we started the Citizens Review Committee back in 1981 was because of the violence and the assaults that were happening to people in the Black community by the Portland Police Department, and knowing what that means as far as creating a circumstance for there to be a board or a commission or a citizens review. And again, being a person that likes to audit processes and policies to see how we can make them more effective, what I've seen is that these systems have built themselves or have been created as a standard for pacification to basically pacify the need for engagement, but there's really no strong teeth in the policies that's given to the order of the people who participate either as volunteers or as paid consultants. And again, that helps us, you know, not be accountable to people that are being harmed by the police. One of the things that I did in 2014 and 15 and on, one of the reasons that I even started getting into police accountability is because my nephew was killed in gun violence and there wasn't even any life-saving devices available for the officers or the first responders to save his life. And going back and forth to the state legislator, what I realize is that the reason that there is such a specific determinant for us to have access to police and to public safety is because we are considered the problem. And a lot of times when you use the words at risk or marginalized, those are ways to criminalize someone's part of society. And so it's not going to change until our leadership changes. I've wanted to go ahead and try to see if we can get special prosecutors so that we could hold police accountable throughout the state of Oregon. But we don't have leaders in City Hall that are utilizing their legislative elite.
Candidate Rayford, I think we've run out of time, but thank you. Candidate Wheeler, I think we're all, there we go.
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. And this is a serious issue, and I appreciate the question. First of all, I respectfully disagree with my opponents on this front. First of all, changing the culture of an organization is not something that happens overnight. It is something that does need to happen. I said it when I ran last time. I backed it with leader changes. And I just want to remind people that when I hired a new police chief, I put as the first sentence of the job description that anybody who wants to be the police chief in this city must have an understanding of the history of racism in this community and how it bleeds over into the present day and the impact that it has on the relationship between the police bureau and the community. And there were a lot of people in this community, including within the police bureau, who strongly objected to that language. They believed that it was over the top. I believed it then, and I believe it now. And I brought in new leadership in Chief Outlaw. She and her deputy chief, who is now the chief, instituted implicit bias training and de-escalation training, which I continue to support. They redoubled our recruiting efforts, particularly to find young people of color who want to engage in policing, because the way you change culture isn't just from the top down, it's also from the bottom up, bringing in people who understand the value of community. And we've been able to do that. And the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing, I think my opponents are selling that group short, and I would encourage them to participate in some of those meetings, talk to the co-chairs, talk to the young African-American folks who have engaged as our youth advisors or youth appointees on that council. You will find that they are strong, they are independent, they're as committed as I am to a culture of change, but they also support the hard work of the men and women in our police bureau. So I hope we'll think a little broadly about how to change culture in this community and not just say change. It's not about change, it's about improvement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Candidate Gonzalez.
Well, I see that there's a couple of things that we're not really acknowledging in the policing conversation. And while accountability and oversight are definitely instruments of check to a system that's been run amok for way too long, as far as how it's been serving the community, I believe that there's opportunity here to be able to take us to the next step of what we really need to accomplish here, which is not just oversight of policing. I think we need community ownership of policing. And I think it needs to be a two-way street. The North Star that I envision for us to lead towards is a place where policing is done by folks that are deeply invested in the communities that they are over, that they are serving, so that the outcomes of those communities are some outcomes that that individual, that that officer, is feeling a vested interest in ensuring our good outcomes. Because that's one of the systemic breaks right now in the system. Much like our governance model does not have district representation, same thing with our policing model. It goes against the grain of the culture to have folks enforcing in the communities where they live. And I know that there's a lot of great logic behind that, but it was a step that took us down the path that we are far down, decades down today, that we need to change. And I believe we need to have community ownership. I've seen pipelines for workforce development in the construction industry. I think we could learn a lot there into policing. I'm talking about having children in the K-12 programs learning about policing, forensics, private investigation, having the young cadet programs, having apprenticeship programs, and showing people the pathways to being part of that sort of security force within the communities that they serve.
Thank you. Well, we're now at the part of our program where we will give each of our candidates the opportunity to offer a two-minute closing statement. And the order of presentation will be candidate Wheeler, candidate Rayford, candidate Ayanna Roan, and candidate Gonzalez. So let us begin, candidate Wheeler.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the Urban League, and I want to thank KBOO, and most especially, I want to thank everybody who took time out of their busy days today to listen to this. This is an important election. And if the COVID crisis has taught us anything, it's that leadership matters. This is not the time to upset the apple cart. We've been doing that every election since the beginning of this century. This is a time to continue the good work we've done on housing, on homelessness, on shared economic prosperity, on making sure that we address our environmental issues, that we make sure that our city is effective and responsive to the needs of our community. If I've demonstrated anything, and again, I make mistakes like everybody else, but I've also demonstrated capacity to bring people together to get things done. And that's what's missing from the body politic today, is that willingness to bring people together, even if they have different views or different perspectives. As you know, I have made equity and inclusion an important part of my administration. I have been there for this community time and time again. I like to believe that's why the Oregonian and the Portland Tribune and Willamette Week and many, many others have endorsed my candidacy. And I'm very proud of the endorsements of State Senator Lou Frederick, former Senators Avell Gordley, Margaret Carter, State Representative Janelle Bynum, and my colleague Joanne Hardesty. Why do I call out those specific endorsements? It's because they do not give endorsements lightly when it comes to the Black community. And they have said, along with many, many others, that they want me to continue the good work that we are doing together. And I need your vote to continue it. So thank you for having me tonight. Thank you all for listening in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Candidate Rayford.
I just want to start with saying that if you have not lost a child to police violence or to gun violence, don't tell us what's working. If you've not been displaced, if you've not experienced racism, disparities that are based on you being a woman or you being a brown person in America, don't tell us that you're getting it right, because you're not. And then the fact that you could say that on this program, which is the Urban League, which is an organization that is supposed to be standing up for the rights and the political access for Black Americans, to not even show humility when you speak about our elders supporting your candidacy in our city is just disingenuous, Ted. I supported you last time that you ran, and I've had a problem with it, because within the first couple of weeks of your candidacy, of your inauguration, people were being murdered in our streets by the Portland police. The fact that you're smiling about it now is a problem. People were dying while they were unhoused in our communities. The fact that you jumped on the bandwagon and were able to, you know, spearhead priorities that had already been in place, those movements happened because of the same people that you mentioned that have endorsed your campaign. Those families, those communities, their experiences, their shared time and efforts to make a more equitable life here in Portland, the resistance that you showed to people like myself, community members like myself that have been harmed in this city, it shows a very serious lack of care, of empathy. I'm ashamed that you're in this platform. I'm ashamed that there are people in my community that have to sit up and watch you be able to say some of the things that you say and to promote them as equitable. I hope that people that are tired of rhetoric and lip service, that know that this city needs an advocate, that needs a leader, someone who is substantial, someone who cares about it, someone who understands policy and is determined to change it. I hope that you will elect me as your next mayor. Please go to our site, TeresaRayfordForMayor.com. Look for equity in your next leader. You can do as much research as you like about me. I love audits. Ted will tell you, a lot of the information that we've been able to talk about for the last 10 years, there weren't leaders demanding information about our problematic outcomes. As somebody who lost someone to gun.
Thank you, candidate Rayford. And we will move on to candidate Ayanna Roan.
Yes, and again, thank you all for being here, Michael. Wonderful moderating. I know it's not easy, especially when we're remote. It's hard to stay connected, but we're all doing our very best. And this is some place where I don't believe keeping an apple cart upended just because it's upended is the right thing to do, especially if that apple cart is filled with rotten apples. What we need to think about is not re-electing someone this century, which actually former mayor of Bear Katz was elected in 2000, I believe. So we often overwrite history to elect successful women. But we need to talk about a change in leadership at a critical time, because now more than ever, what Portland needs is a compassionate, courageous mayor who's not going to take credit for the work of communities that are already coming together, as candidate Rayford has mentioned. These things go on in Portland regardless who's mayor. What we need is someone who is going to empower those communities, who is going to unleash their potential, who is going to make sure that what's happening in a city hall is not a barrier to them achieving their ideals and realizing success in their communities, because they think they know best, because they think they know how, and because they think they have all the answers. What we need is someone who understands that as we face these challenges, we also face great opportunities. There are so many ways that through this, Portlanders can begin to meet our climate action goals and really get those green jobs to the families that need them most, make intensified investments that help us keep our air quality clean and our vehicle miles traveled low, and make sure that our families are telecommuting and that every household has broadband, and that we're really shoring up our communities and our families, our working families, not through a mindset of austerity and budget cuts, but investing for the future. Because we know that through strategic infrastructure investments, through programmatic investments, through entrepreneurial and workforce investments, that we can actually start to make progress on things like climate action, housing affordability that's affordable with a lowercase a for a lot of Portlanders, and racial equality, so that we are truly a resilient city even after we recover from the COVID crisis. You can visit me at sarah2020.com to learn more about me, and I'll look forward to your vote on May 19th if you should choose to give it to me. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you. Candidate Gonzalez.
Thank you very much once again, Michael, and to the Urban League and to KBOO for helping bring this forward. I really appreciate everyone that's come out tonight and whoever is going to be viewing this in the future after the live broadcast for taking an interest in the race. With so many things out there to be concerned about, this could even seem like a distraction to pay attention to politics. But in reality, it's one of the most important things we need to be doing right now. All of the issues that came to us before COVID, homelessness, housing affordability, congestion, were all things that really required a different approach to leadership. The thinking that got us to that point is not the thinking that's going to get us out of this. And I believe right now more than ever, we do need a different kind of leadership, and one that has a bold vision, that is able to show and articulate to the city at large what it is that we are striving towards to become. Our mayor, while well-intended, I think is missing some critical areas where we are able to navigate how we embrace different perspectives, and to how we open up to the things that we do not currently see here in Portland today. The city of Portland is at a critical moment in time where it understands that the apple cart does have rotten apples in it, but we have to rebuild the apple cart itself, because before COVID, the apple cart was already showing signs of cracking. I think there's a lot of people on this call today that weren't necessarily pleased with that apple cart, and it wasn't really doing much for us. And so we have to not only think about upsetting the apple cart, because it's already been upset by COVID. What we come back to and how we rebuild that apple cart requires someone that knows how to see the lived experience of others as the thing that is most valuable. It's not our degrees that are going to get us out of this now. It's our humanity. And we need leaders with heart and mind. And I have the technical experience, the ability, and the heart. Visit my website, aussieforpdx.org. I would love to be able to share my ideas with you and to be able to engage. I'll be going deeper into this next week. So visit my site for more details. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's our forum to an end, and I do want to take a moment and gratefully thank our four candidates for the time that you spent with us this evening, but more importantly, for the path that your lives and commitment to this city has taken you on that has brought you to this moment. So we are deeply grateful. I also want to acknowledge our partners in this effort, particularly our colleagues at Open Signal, who have really been the infrastructure backbone in supporting this, our colleagues at KBOO, and for the folks who submitted the questions. We had a number of recommendations that we were able to weave in the themes to create the questions that we presented. I also want to take the moment and ask that people take a moment and look at all of the websites of our candidates, but also visit the website of the Urban League of Portland. This is an illustration of the work that we've done to make sure that we are supporting the needs of a broad range of people within this community, primarily African Americans, but the issues that we face are faced by issues across this region. And if we're able to lift the resolution and the clarity around the path forward for our community, we know that others will benefit as well. So please take a moment and look at ways in which we do that work and you can support us. We will be transitioning in a few moments to our second forum, which is a look at the candidates who are vying for the position of Multnomah County. Now I'm going to have a freeze. District attorney. But it's good. I don't know the district's attorneys very well, which is probably a good thing. But we would ask that you stay with us. And we have a very short promotional video that we'll be promoting. But in the meantime, I want to thank our candidates, release you to go about, I'm sure, what have been very busy schedules. And I'm sure it's not over now. But thank you for being with us. And we wish you good fortune.
If you look at like health disparities across Portland, even across the nation, it's similar, but across Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and we are just finishing off the Urban League of Portland 2020 Black Votes Matter candidate forum. And coming up next is going to be another candidate forum for the district attorney position. We here at KBOO are very, very happy that we could partner up with the Urban League of Portland as well as Open Signal to bring you this live stream, this live broadcast to keep the community informed. That is part of local radio, local community. You are the community, and this is all stuff for the community, and this is our role within said community, is to bring you, update you, and amplify the voices of our, again, community. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and here is the rest of the forum. Enjoy.
You know, we're sort of getting everything ready, is that we're going to ask.
Okay. Well, good evening, and welcome back to the Urban League of Portland's 2020 Black Votes Matter Candidate Forum. My name is Mike Alexander, and I serve as a board member of the Urbana Vision Trust, as well as the former president and chief executive officer of the Urban League of Portland. And on behalf of president and CEO Nkonge Herman Johnson, as well as board chair Michael Llewellyn and the staff and board of the Urban League, it's my privilege to welcome you to tonight's forum. For the next 45 minutes to an hour, we will hear from two candidates for the office of Multnomah County District Attorney. This individual will serve as the chief legal officer for the county. And the office of District Attorney plays a significant role in setting the legal tone for the region. Within this jurisdiction, they decide whether to prosecute a case, what the specific charges will be against the accused, and whether to bring a case to the grand jury. The election to this office takes place during a time of unprecedented challenge, crisis, and urban calls for directing our efforts on a range of issues facing both the county, its residents, and most importantly, the African American community. So we thank you for joining us for this important opportunity to hear directly from the two gentlemen who have come forward with the desire to lead this work. And now please allow me to introduce tonight's candidates in alphabetical order. They are Ethan Knight and Mike Smith. And I want to welcome you both. I want to take a moment and just review a few ground rules for the event. And we ask first that our candidates keep their mics muted other than while they're actually speaking. It helps us to maintain some audio clarity for our audience. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for an opening statement, and we will begin with candidate Knight, followed by candidate Smith. And then we will move on to asking the candidates to answer a series of questions. And each candidate will again have 2 minutes to respond, and there's no option for rebuttal. We have 12 questions in total, and for the first 6 questions, we will begin with candidate Smith responding, followed by candidate Knight. For our last 6 questions, we will begin with candidate Knight, followed by candidate Smith. We hope to get through our 12 questions, and if we can manage our time, and if people can be responsive to the consideration of limiting themselves to 2 minutes, we should be able to do that. If for any reason a candidate runs over that, we will notify them via personal prompt when there are 30 seconds left. And if they exceed the 2 minutes, then we'll notify the candidates in the audience that their time is up. So with that, let us begin with opening statements. And I invite candidate Knight to unmute and offer us your opening comments.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having me this evening and for all those who are joining us on the live stream. My name is Ethan Knight, and I'm obviously one of the candidates for Multnomah County District Attorney. I'm running for Multnomah County District Attorney because I love this community, and I've spent over 2 decades in public service, and I hope to continue this work and my vision for a stable community, particularly in this time of crisis. Now, I've spent roughly the last 12 years as a federal prosecutor here in Portland, during a number of administrations, handling a variety of cases: public corruption, violent crime, domestic terrorism, international terrorism, and espionage. And before that, I spent 8 years as a state prosecutor in Multnomah County, where I handled a range of offenses that they prosecute in that office, including environmental crimes and violent crimes, and I also helped start the community court program. And beyond that, as someone who grew up here in Portland, I've spent a tremendous amount of time active in the community, particularly working on access for justice issues within the legal community. And that informs my vision and why I'm here today. You know, I believe that the elected district attorney should lead an office that's caring, thoughtful, and does the best work possible with the mandate that that office has, and that is prosecuting the crimes that are brought before it, and does so in a manner that considers the community and the issues in the community. And a particular focus for me and a concern for me in this time of crisis is how we manage our lowest level offenses, how we handle those issues that touch on addiction and other problems in our community. And that informs my vision and my experience, and I look forward to sharing that with all of you tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Candidate Smith.
Yeah, thank you so much for